This segment of the Outpost On Demand podcast is brought to you by Gordo's Cheese Dip, America's number one selling cheese dip. Get dipping, America, with Gordo's. Every outdoorsman knows that before you head out to the woods or water, the first thing you do is to get your gear together. The next thing on your list is to pack up all your food. So while you're enjoying life in the great outdoors, don't forget to pick up America's number one cheese dip, Gordo's. Gordo's Cheese Dip, now in six delicious flavors. Available in the deli section of your local area Walmart or your favorite grocery store today. Get dipping, America, with Gordo's Cheese Dip.
The Outpost Radio On Demand. Here's Art Young from the Outpost Magazine.
If you're not hungry now, you will be after listening to my guest today at the Outpost. Scott Laceth is one of America's best-known chefs. He's passionate about cooking, especially when it has to do with fur, fins, or feathers. He's the host of the most popular wild game cooking show on TV, The Sporting Chef, on Sportsman Channel, and he has an incredible new cookbook that every deer hunter will be salivating over. Called the Sporting Chef's Better Venison Cookbook. Welcome to the Outpost, Chef.
You know, good to be here. And you'll notice I didn't say best venison recipes because, you know, who can say which recipes are the best, right?
Right, but in your learned opinion, they're at least better than
better than putting it in a slow cooker with a can of cream of mushroom soup. How's that?
much better, which is how most of us who don't know what we're doing do. You know, before we get into the book, though, I have to ask you. To me, it's amazing how many cooking shows there are on TV now. Why do you think? Why is that? Why are there so many cooking shows?
It started with the Food Network. They've changed the way that we look at food. You know, I grew up with a handful of TV chefs. You know, there's Julia Child and Graham Kerr and Justin Wilson, I guarantee, those kind of guys. And the next thing you know, you've got Emeril with a one-hour variety show where he's cooking on prime time five nights a week, which if you've ever had to do that every night for five nights a week, and fortunately the majority of us haven't, it's not easy to do and to hold an audience for that long. And so, you know, we've gone from, you know, fast food places just serving fast food to now having Chipotle this and all sorts of things we hadn't heard of. And it's really changed the way we look at food. So we're no longer satisfied with the basic steak and potatoes, at least for most of us. So we're looking for new stuff. I think very few of the people that watch cooking shows actually sit down with a pad of paper and write down recipes. I think they just want to be entertained, mm-hmm. and everybody eats.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, you have absolutely, I don't know how many, has it been 25 years you've been on TV?
You know, it feels like it. It's late 90s. I started on HGTV.
Oh, okay. Still, that's a lot of years.
Yeah, I've been doing the wild game cooking thing for every bit of 25 years. The TV career started late 90s with a show called Homegrown Cooking on HGTV. So I've had my own fish and game cooking show for, I don't know. If I say it's 12, it's probably 14 because that's mm-hmm. kind of the way my mind works, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a chef. You're not a mathematician.
No, that's been pretty well documented on the mathematician.
Right. Okay, yeah. Well, your new book, A Better Venison Cookbook, is absolutely packed with innovative ways to cook what many feel is a difficult thing to cook, you know, wild game venison. Why do you think most of us have trouble cooking venison?
I think most of us overcook it. And so the solution is we need to cook it longer, and we need to put all these things on it to make it not taste like venison. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had Benny Spies is a host. He's got a show called Gun It with Benny Spies on Sportsman Channel. He just sent me a moose, me some moose loin, because he said, I can't eat it. And what the processor had done is they cut it up, and they had left all the silver skin and fat on the loin. And when I just started eating out of the center of the loin, it was delicious. Once I got to that outside part, it was rank. It was rancid. So what a lot of deer hunters don't do, I mean, we've heard it a million times, it starts in the field. Don't drive your deer around on a hot day in the back of your truck. Get it cooled and cleaned as fast as you can. But then different parts of a deer require different kinds of cooking. For instance, I know you've seen, and this the way most processors take a deer backstrap is they'll take the backstrap, they cut it into chunks, and then they butterfly it, right?
Right.
Why?
You know, that's a good question. Why do we do that? Somebody told us, I guess.
And that's standard deal. It's a butterfly. And I've posted that on our Facebook page, and people go, well, that's so you can cook it more evenly. I'm going, you know what? I'd rather have the whole loin. I'm going to take that silver skin off, and that way I can butterfly the whole thing, stuff it, tie it, cook it as a roast. I don't have a problem cutting a deer backstrap into steaks and butterflying them if that's what I want to do. But once they do that, we lose the option to do that. If you take, very often people bring me deer steaks and they're bone in. They're basically a cross section of the hindquarter that's been put on a bandsaw. And that silver skin, fat, and gristle doesn't taste good. And there's obviously not a whole lot of fat on some of the better white-tailed deer. You're going to see that rump fat on there, but there's not a whole lot of fat on a deer. And very often, deer fat doesn't taste good, and that's why we soak it in something, wrap it in bacon and jalapeno, and call it a, whatever it is, a deer bite, a little appetizer. We go to great lengths to make deer not taste like deer.
Right.
And if it's just well-trimmed, silver skin's removed, you don't cook it past about 130 to 135 degrees, you slice it across the grain when you serve it, people will go, man, this is incredible. But once you start overcooking it, that's when you get into the dreaded livery muttony zone. And then that in-between zone is where it hurts the most. I think your choices for me are either quickly cooked so that it's rare to medium rare or slow cooked until it's pot roast. And, you know, for the tougher cuts like shanks, which is deer shanks are one of my favorite hunks of meat, you got to cook those slow. You can't speed it up. And so it's basically, you know, we don't cook whole cows as a general rule. We break them down. A brisket's going to take a long time to cook. The tenderloins take very little time. And it's very much basics like that I try and get across in the cookbook.
Yeah. Well, you know, the introduction to this book, before we came on, I told you I had spent some time reading it. I think the introduction of this book is worth the price of admission. I was laughing out loud on some of the insights you have about, I don't know whether it's wives' tales or whatever it is, but you have a couple of really funny insights as to, for example, meat tenderizers, as you just covered. But, you know, what do you, give us your thoughts on things like, you know, what do you think about injecting venison with marinades?
You know, I'm okay with injecting. It's not a personal preference of mine, and I've done it. And what I get when you inject marinades is you're going to get pockets of marinade. It doesn't seem to distribute as evenly as I'd like it to do. And the thing that I would marinate the most would be a roast. If I'm going to inject something, it's going to be like a hindquarter roast. And I've found that if I take that hindquarter roast and brown it well on the outside and cook it to about 130 degree internal temperature, put it into a little Playmate cooler and pour the marinade over the top instead of injecting it. Once it's cooked, when it's hot and porous, it will absorb all that marinade very evenly and it will penetrate a lot farther than when it's a raw piece of meat. Like I said, I do inject. I've got injectors, and most of the time, though, I just rather give it a good rub and then cook it to rare temp, put some marinade over the top, put it in the smallest cooler it'll fit in, and just let it sit there for about an hour in that marinade. It'll still come out screaming hot, and that marinade will be absorbed by that hot, more porous piece of meat.
Are there one or two... things that an amateur cook like me or someone who doesn't cook venison as much as you do, is there one or two things we can do to dramatically improve the finished product?
when you're cooking a deer steak, for instance, or a backstrap or a tenderloin, rare to medium rare makes every bit of the difference. Now, some people have been raised on well-done meat, and they cannot venture out. They can't get themselves to take 15 seconds out of their lives and try a bite of rare to medium rare meat. They go, I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. I can't help you there. But if you're open, I want you to take your next deer steak and cut it in half and cook half of it well done and half of it medium rare. It's two completely different pieces of meat. So as much as I like bacon, it's not necessary to wrap everything in bacon. To me, the tenderness comes from not overcooking that very, very same piece of meat. That's the single biggest mistake that I see people that cook venison that have decided they don't like venison. That's the mistake they make. I don't like livery, muttony flavors. I don't like gamey flavors, but I also don't want to try and disguise what the deer tastes like. My deer doesn't taste livery, and it's not because I soaked it in something or marinated it in something. Dry aging makes a difference to me. If you've got a deer roast in your freezer and it hasn't been aged for very long, take that, put it on a rack in your refrigerator with a pan underneath, and I want you to leave it in there for at least a week after it's been thawed. And it's going to get a little crispy on the outside. You can always cut off the extra crispy parts, but what that will do is it will, the capillary blood, which carries a lot of the waste from those animals, it will evaporate, and it's going to dry it out, and it's going to make it infinitely more tender than if you don't.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Two tips that even the cloudiest among us can use. One of your contributors on your TV show is one of my favorite chefs and human beings, Stacey Harris, and she has been leading the charge for sustainable living, woods to table movement. You know, has this whole trend caught hold with the majority of Americans, or is this something that's going to take more time?
You know, we're seeing people come out of the city and into the woods. There's been a movement, you know, for people trying to discover the roots of their food and going out and shooting their first deer and you know, growing their own and staying within a radius, you know, the whole farm to fork movement. Mm-hmm. Stacy's a big part of that, and with her emphasis on sustainable foods, she's the real deal. We love having her on the show. And I mean, not only is she easy on the eyes, she's right. Very articulate. She knows what she's doing, and I've been to her house and shot several segments with her. And I mean, she's okay. So not only is she a sustainable living pro, she has a law degree. She's yep. homeschooled seven kids.
Yep.
You know,
nothing going for this woman. Nothing.
You know,
for
you go
woman.
There and you just feel like such an underachiever when you go to Stacy's place.
Yeah.
And we're happy to have her on the show. But no, I do see it. I don't know if it's an overwhelming movement. I have a 17-year-old that I still have to talk him out of going to eat fast food.
Right. But
people want to get closer to their food, and when I do demonstrations, I'll put a bag of frozen steam in the pouch vegetables out on the counter, and then some real vegetables, and I go, really? How much harder is it to cut these and cook them properly than to throw that overcooked microwave bag of frozen vegetables in the microwave?
Yeah, you know, I think this time of year, when people are actually out hunting for white-tailed deer and other things, other kind of wild game, many hunters love to prepare their food. You know, once they've harvested it, they like to cook it at the deer camp. And how does that, and from a preparation standpoint, how does grilling kind of at an open grill differ from cooking that venison in a traditional kitchen environment?
You know, and it's funny, right now I'm writing a feature piece that's going to be in the DU magazine on duck camp cooking and doing the same kind of deal. And the best way to prepare, if you're going to deer camp, any kind of hunting camp, do most of your chopping at home. Cut your vegetables, cut your onions, make your marinades, put them in vacuum-packed bags, take whatever meat it is, go ahead and trim it up. If you're planning on eating deer steaks that have been recently harvested and they're hanging on a tree somewhere in camp, the least amount of work that you have to do when you're there makes a big difference. Any heat source will cook game. And so I'm a big fan of outdoor grilling. So to me, it's no different in my backyard than it is in deer camp, other than the fact that I'm going to bring seasonings, veg already chopped, in bags. I like to take the vegetables and I will prep them, I'll vacuum pack them, and I'll freeze them, and I'll put them in my cooler so it requires less ice for transport. And that way I can spend more time talking to my buddies and having a glass of whatever when I'm at camp, as opposed to spending the day in the kitchen. Like I said, anything you can do in your backyard, you can do it. You can do in camp. It just tastes better when you're in camp, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll bet you are the guy that they go, let's let Scott cook that.
Well, you know, and I don't mind doing that. What I'll tell you when I mind it, if somebody says, you know what, if you come out to my duck club, we'll let you duck hunt if you cook us dinner.
Right.
And you know, I'll cook them dinner if they don't make it contingent upon me cooking dinner. If duck hunting is not contingent upon me cooking dinner, but it's just a personal thing. I'd rather cook than sit around and talk about the same thing over and over. It keeps me occupied.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, do you have a favorite kind of hunting or fishing, or do you just like it all?
You know, I prefer bird hunting over most things. Where I live in Northern California, we've got 100-plus day duck season. We can shoot 10 specks a day here.
Wow.
We've got, you know, it's 7 ducks a day, and, you know, people that are unfamiliar with Northern California, they go, oh, well, what kind of ducks? You know, we're shooting mallard, pintail, wigeon, teal. We're shooting puddle ducks. We also have a fair amount of pheasants here. We have a 6 or 7 week pheasant season. I'm looking down at an English setter and Gordon setter that are under my desk right now. So I've got setters. Where I live, we have a lot more access to birds than we do antlered game. We got plenty of pigs, but I like watching the dogs work. I like getting out, and, you know, we've got a ton of quail, ton of turkeys. We're just a little short on deer.
Yeah. It's the quail population down in the area that we're in, Texas and Louisiana, is really gone down. We have almost no quail population. I think they're doing some studies on it, and hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it. But I'm with you. I enjoy bird hunting probably much more than big game hunting. But I love to eat big game. So, you know,
you've got
hundreds of recipes about cooking venison in this book. Tell me, this is a horrible question, but people always ask you this kind of question. Out of the hundreds of recipes you've got, is there one or two that you just love to cook, that you like the taste of, or has some kind of unique thing that makes it, you know, a special recipe as opposed to just another recipe?
Well, I'll tell you my go-to recipe for just about any dark-fleshed game or antlered game, and it's so very simple. Again, I like, you know, I mean, my favorite foods include raw oysters, homegrown tomatoes, sashimi, fish that's not cooked. So I'm cooking all the time for others, so I'm not looking to disguise the flavor of that meat. So I'll take a deer backstrap or a good hindquarter steak from a more tender animal. I'm going to rub it with olive oil and salt and pepper. I'm going to put it into a good cast iron skillet, rare to medium rare, just before it comes out. I'm going to put a splash of balsamic vinegar, a spoonful of whatever preserves I have in the refrigerator. Take the meat out. Don't let it overcook. I'm going to throw in a little bit of garlic, some chopped fresh rosemary. Reduce that liquid down. Whisk in a little chilled butter. Take the deer. Slice it across the grain. Mound it up on a pile of garlic mashed potatoes. And then just take that sauce, that pan sauce, and if you've got some fresh berries, throw them in there too. and just drizzle over the meat, I'm telling you, it's a balance. And it's something, you know, anything you can make in one pan, you can cook your deer steak in, you know, 4 or 5 minutes with the sauce. To me, that's the victory. And that's the one that I'm most likely to use.
As I said at the beginning, if you're not hungry at the end of this interview, you should check your pulse, because that sounds like a great, great venison recipe.
And it doesn't require any special skill or any obscure ingredients. There's no free range anything. To me, if I've got a recipe that's 3 pages long, nobody's going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So give me a handful of ingredients and a good deer steak, and we're all going to be happy.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, you're a charming man. Can you tell us, where can we get this Sporting Chef's Better Venison Cookbook?
You know, probably the best place to get it is on Amazon. And if you just type in Better Venison or Sporting Chef, it'll take you there. And I'm also part of a new Boone and Crockett cookbook called Wild Gourmet, which is a collaborative effort with me and Emeril Lagasse and Hank Shaw and a few other names you might recognize. And that's a good one, too. So I've got a website, sportingchef.com, that's got plenty of free stuff. I know that doesn't help me sell cookbooks. Sign up for our email deal when you get to the website, and we'll send you a free e-cookbook. And, you know, that's we just want to connect. We want people to watch the show on Sportsman Channel. It'll be our new airtime, Eastern Time, 12:30 p.m. on Sundays, and it's on a few other times. But like you said, we've got, you know, Stacey Harris, Hank Shaw. We have 25 people at last count that are on the Sporting Chef show.
Wow.
So if you don't like somebody you see, just wait about a minute and a half and you're going to see somebody else. So we call it short attention span TV.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I mean, you got the hunter and fisherman in mind when you're thinking about that.
Absolutely.
We are the ADD folks out there, and we're proud of it. So, Scott, this is a wonderful book, and I highly recommend it to anyone who either prepares venison or knows someone who would like to prepare venison. The Sporting Chef is on the Sportsman Channel. Sporting Chef's Better Venison Cookbook is what we've been talking about. Scott, best of luck with the new season and best of luck with this book.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
The Outpost Radio On Demand, from the on-demand page of theoutpostlife.com.